Blog Talk Radio.
To everyone, welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, it is always wonderful to be here with you live and in living color. We are, of course, continuing our tribute salute to now Saint Queen Mother Moore. And we kick things off, of course, on Tuesday when we also began the process of creating the sainthood installment for the great Amy Jacques Garvey. And that took place, of course, on Tuesday, July 25th at the UNIA building, the historic UNIA building. And, you know, it was very important to do that. You know, we're going to kind of go into tonight some of what is about to unfold. And I can tell you it's going to be very, very interesting. And also for some, it's going to be a shock. Because for quite some time, folks have talked about certain things. And, of course, many have been doing various things. But certainly, as we are now in the 21st century, obviously, there are some things that really could have been done, should have been done, and wasn't. And so we're all paying a price for that, needless to say. And I'm going to go more into what I'm talking about, because after two decades, I've been able to make that observation and also to really take some pretty good notes on some of these things as well. Before I go into what we're going to talk about for tonight, what I'd like to do is let you know that as a part of the Queen Mother Moore, Saint Queen Mother Moore, that is, weekend, I want to give a couple of shouts out to Brother Chef. I got to say, you know, we sent information out to a lot of people, and we can tell you who they are because we kept a nice record of that. And it's only a few, really, that, you know, for whatever reason, decided that they would support or join or what have you. And we've been sending this information out for over a year. So it's not like it was sent last week or last month. It was literally sent out for roughly a year. And only a few decided that they, you know, would support realistically or even respond. And then we had a few people that literally responded in the same week that we were doing it. And it was like, really? Do you really think that that's going to continue to happen? And so, you know, we have to begin to address some of these situations based on, you know, what's really going on with that. And so we definitely are planning to do that now. All right. But at any rate, I'm going to give you more information about that because as we now prepare for the Million Woman World March, that's right. Now, we know that, you know, there's a few people who really aren't feeling it, right? They're not feeling it, and it's okay because we're not feeling you, to be honest with you. Again, we have done this thing now in a certain kind of way to be able to really know and learn some very key kinds of things. And so now we're ready to move forward. We've been ready to move forward for a while, but now we're going to move forward in such a way that it's going to exemplify what we've been talking about, what we've been doing for quite a while. I don't know if some really thought we were not serious or something. I'm not sure. But you certainly are about to see that we most certainly were and are. The mere fact that we sacrificed over the years, not having grants, not doing corporate sponsoring, we certainly could have done that and could have done it abundantly. We've also sat back and watched people utilize some of the things that we launched, initiated. And we're going to give you a good example of that very shortly and why it's so interesting that people, for whatever reason, did not find the need to say something or do something when they kind of saw some things going on. So at any rate, we are definitely prepared now to, again, to move forward in the most positive, productive ways possible. And with that, bring forward some of the things that we talked about over these past decades. And what folks didn't know is that we were literally preparing to do some of these things, and now we are. So, again, big ups to our brother Shep. Really, really appreciate the work that he did yesterday over at the Church of the Overcomer. Had an excellent, excellent exhibit that was presented and shown to the people. And again, we thank those that came out to support that. Also, for Pastor Keith, we thank him and his wife. And again, all of the folks that really showed us some love, not just this week for the Queen Mother More weekend, but in general, those who really, you know, hung in there with us, we again appreciate you so, so very much. And we're going to show you just how much in the very near future. Again, before we go on, I want you to know that we are going to talk with, very soon, Dr. Sydney Davis, who is going to be joining us to talk a little bit about a person that I had the opportunity to meet a few years ago. And again, we've been building relationships with folk over the years. And so Senator Bill Owens, a lot of people may not be familiar with that name, but Senator Bill Owens was one of the first legislators to bring reparations into the legislative arena, right? And so, again, we want to make sure that people know some of the people who were instrumental over the years in playing a role in this thing that we call reparations, this thing we call reparatory justice. We want to make sure that people know that there are people who you may not have heard of or may not be familiar with, but nevertheless, we want to make sure that you do know who some of these folks are. And so, again, Senator Bill Owens out of Boston was one of the first to, you know, introduce legislation into, you know, the arena in regards to reparations. And so when Dr. Sydney Davis joins us tonight, we will talk a little about the contribution of Senator Bill Owens, who, by the way, became an ancestor, I believe it was last year. I got the opportunity to meet him, and this was when there was a commemoration for the first National Black Political Convention that took place in Gary, Indiana. There was an anniversary that took place, and I got a chance to meet Senator Owens then. And you know, sometimes when you meet people, you just automatically know that these folks are for real. And so we met, and automatically, right away, we knew that, you know, we was kind of, you know, cut from a similar same cloth. And so over the years, we kept a relationship or kept in contact. So it was a bit sad to hear that he had made transition, but again, he definitely made a contribution in terms of his work. So moving right along, again, we are going to talk with him, not with him, but a close, obviously not with him, a close associate and ally and brother to Senator Bill Owens, and that again is Dr. Sydney Davis, and so we're going to talk with him. And also, we are going to talk about a sister. As we bring forward the energy, the synergy, the spirit of Queen Mother More, we're going to talk about a sister that also carried that spirit. And I know firsthand, because she also did security for me for the Million Woman March, and she did security for Queen Mother More. Yes, she did. And see, the beautiful thing about Queen, Mama, Ancestor, and Jerry Agani is that when she first heard about the Million Woman March, she literally came to my shop, and we sat down, and we talked about it. And, you know, she didn't know a lot about it at that time, as many didn't, but once she did hear about it, she was like, okay, yeah, we're definitely doing this. So, again, these are some of the stories, some of the information that we are now going to start sharing with people, because there is a real history and legacy and story about the original historic Million Woman March. And we're going to start sharing some of that information with you, because there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. So again, we're going to talk with one of the, they say children, or one of the young adults, but, you know, we deal with the concept of extended family. So even though someone might not be a biological relative, you come up in a certain kind of way with some of us is as if you are our, you know, biological child or relative or whatever. And for some of us, that's how we were taught when it comes to dealing in the movement or being in the movement. Some of us really, really take this thing very seriously. And what I mean by that is we don't take it for granted. When we say brother, sister, we really mean it. It's not just a cliche or a title that we come up with. Some of us literally mean that in the most heartfelt way. So, you know, when you hear me talk about Baba Bilal, Sunni Ali, I'm saying that in a context of a certain type, because over the years, he has been my Baba, like a Baba to me. And so as I oftentimes say to Sister Keisha, who is blessed to have a real strong family network, you know, and I think that's a wonderful, beautiful thing. But some of us didn't come up with that. Some of us, you know, weren't that fortunate to have that. And so we had to build our own kind of family structures with those who we were able to meet later in life. And so there are a few of those folk that I am so pleased to have been connected to and hold them in that high regard. And I'm going to be sharing who some of those folks are as we proceed. And so, again, big up to Brother Shep. Again, he came through like the real warrior brother that he is. And also, again, I mentioned Baba Bilal, Sunni Ali over the years. I'm going to tell folks some stories. Oh, my goodness. There are some stories that we're going to share with you because, again, we talk about Dr. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad, right? Well, these are things, again, that we have to look at a lot closer, because when Dr. made transition, that was the first indication that I knew I had to really be careful about some things. Because when Dr. May transitioned, there really wasn't a lot of questions being asked for whatever reason. Even though he always taught, if something was to happen, there were certain things that people were supposed to do. And not just the people who were in his organization, but people who said they loved and appreciated him, the people, our people. But for whatever reason, most when he made transition and they heard, oh, he had a brain aneurysm and he had high blood pressure and he wasn't taking his medication, they left it at that. And that's when I realized, oh, boy, you better be very careful, because to the degree that people care about certain things, nope, they really don't. Not like that. And again, we're going to give some interesting examples very soon. But in the meantime, what we're getting ready to do is, let me see, I'm checking a few things out here. Okay, give me a minute, family, because I'm on a different device than what I'm usually on, so I have to make a few adjustments here. However, what I'm going to do is ask that if, oh, there we are, I see it, okay. We're gonna ask if you are in queue, Dr. Davis, if you're in queue, I need you to press 1 because then I can see you, and I need to see you, okay, because then I can bring you into the conversation. All right, so again, Dr. Davis, if you are in queue, we are ready for you to come in. You need to press 1, and then again, we will begin the dialogue, okay? In the meantime, yep, all right, I think I see you there. All right, very good. All right, family, so listen, moving right along. Again, we're going to talk for a bit about, again, a black man, right, that I had the opportunity to meet. And, again, we immediately connected, right? We're talking about Senator Bill Owens. And I'm going to have Dr. Davis to share with you some things about this great brother because, you know, a lot of these politicians that we presently have today, they're getting away with a lot of stuff, and folks are letting them do that. We think sometimes because they're saying something that might sound like it's, you know, positive, progressive or even, you know, black, really, we need to look sometimes a little closer. And so we do have examples of a few who literally do represent. Wait a minute, Dr. Davis, I thought I had you. I am not seeing you now. So, again, you need to press 1 because somehow, okay, there you are. All right. And so, again, you know, we got to start holding people accountable. And so starting tomorrow, we will begin to give folks information and instructions, shall we say, boots on the ground. You got some kazi, some work. And what it means is we're now getting ready to implement some surveys or polls, so that the elected officials throughout the U.S., we will be saying to them, we need to know your position on a few things. 2 of them is, what is your position on reparations? Okay? We're literally going to ask folks to begin to help us to take the poll with all over the country for black elected officials. We want to know, yay or nay? And if it's yay, what's your plan, or what are you thinking about doing, or what do you want to do? If it's nay, we don't need to go any further with that. Oh, we might ask them why they don't want to support it. We might do that. Then the other question we're going to be raising is, what is your position on freeing our political prisoners? Yeah or nay? And we need to see this in writing. We don't need to deal with an assumption. We don't need to hear no hype. We need to see it in writing so that when election come again, we will know what their positions are. And when they're asking people to vote, we will be able to do so a little more intelligently. So that's some of the things you're going to hear us to begin bringing forward with the Million Woman World March, the Million Woman Party, and other components that we're now introducing. So without further ado, we're getting ready to go into some serious talk, y'all. Again, the time has come to step this thing up, and so we shall. So I'd like to introduce to you, again, we just had the opportunity to meet Dr. Davis. I hope he doesn't mind me calling him Brother Sydney, because, again, we try to build not only professional relationships, but certainly we like to build relationships that are extended family oriented. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you all Dr. Sydney Davis, but also Brother Sydney. And again, he's going to talk to us about Senator Bill Owens and why we are having this conversation about him, his contributions, of course. So let's go to that live line and let's welcome Dr. Sydney Davis. Greetings to you, my brother. How are you this evening?
I am well. Can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Wonderful. Okay.
Thank you for taking the time to join us tonight.
It's my privilege and my honor, Empress. Thank you for the invitation.
Indeed.
Yes, How much time do I have? I don't want to take up all the time, and I want to make sure I get in all the good stuff. So how much time do I have?
Well, we're not rushing tonight, so we're good.
Okay.
If
right.
You got
go ahead,
10, 15 minutes. Yep.
I'm going to go ahead. Bill Owens was a mentor of mine. I consider myself his protege. I am still living in his house. He had an apartment in his house that he let me stay because I paid, but, you know, I stayed with him, and we had many conversations together. He tried to mentor me into going into politics, but I didn't feel unction at that time to do that, but he was a good mm-hmm. friend of mine and precious friend of mm-hmm. mine. Bill Owens mm-hmm. Was the first black state senator elected
mm-hmm.
in the Massachusetts legislature. He was first elected to the caucus. I mean, he was the founder of the Black Legislative Caucus in Boston. We call it Beacon Hill, you know, the state house in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Beacon Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
we to the legislature, it's Beacon Hill. But he was the founder of the Black Legislative Caucus in 1972. And so that's when he was elected to the House. He was later elected as the first black state senator in Massachusetts
mm-hmm.
in 1988. And was the first legislator, black, white, I don't care, the first legislator to file legislation on reparations. Representative Bill Conyers called Bill Owens about the bill that Bill Owens had introduced into the state legislature of Massachusetts, and Representative Conyers modeled his legislation in the House
mm-hmm.
after Bill Owens' legislation. So we will say that our brother Bill Owens, the senator, I always refer to him as the senator. He is called the godfather of reparations. Now, if you were to Google godfather of reparations, the first hit you will get is Bill Owens. He is the father, or we can call him the godfather, of reparations. He was elected to the legislature in 1972, then later became the first senator, the first black senator to be elected. That was in 1982, by the way, when he was elected to be the first black senator of the state of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in 1988 that he filed legislation for reparations in the state legislature. Of course, he was very active in many of the things that we were doing on behalf of the community, the black community.
Mm-hmm.
He was a force to be reckoned with. Now, Senator Owens also, his work encompassed more than just what he was doing here in Boston. His work
mm-hmm.
went all the way to Africa, both sides
yes.
of the continent.
Yes.
He was doing work in Nigeria, and he was doing work with Somalia. He was working with, the northern part of Somalia is trying to become independent or its own state, and he was working with their leaders in trying to help them to get that done. This is just before he died. He died on January 22nd. In 2022, 84
mm-hmm.
years old.
Yes.
So this is the great legacy of our brother. As I said, he filed that bill. Representative Conyers modeled that bill that he filed in Congress after Senator Bill Owens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, So Bill Owens and I, I used to go down in his house, in his apartment, and we talk about his history, his love for history, his love for his community. He used to really treasure the history, his history with being mentored by Ralph Abernathy. Ralph Abernathy appointed a young Bill Owens to be the Sunday school teacher in his church. Bill Owens, Alabama, he was Alabama, and he later came to Boston with members of his family and became a businessman, and then later entered into politics. He experienced, he had quite an experience in dealing with matters of civil rights, equality, and so on. He was a very fierce defender of women.
Mm-hmm.
To prison, defending his wife. His wife was being attacked by a gentleman who he stood up to, and defense stabbed him to defend his wife's honor, and went to prison.
That's right.
He brags about that. And so his commitment to women is something that he wore as a badge of honor. And so he was very committed to the elevation of the black woman as well. And he supported initiatives that were organized by black women in the state of Massachusetts. And he was very much sought after by black women groups because of his commitment to the black women and to their cause and to their how they would go for the things that they deserved in the matter of whatever that it concerned them in the community or in the political arena. And even in the international arena, he was very committed to the black womanhood, what we would call women's. We won't call it women's rights, but we will call it the rights of black. So, I think that his place in our memory is solid. There should be a statue built after this man. There should be a house or a building or a block or street named after this man because of the accomplishments, the single accomplishments that this man has done and that he has accomplished on behalf of black people. And I think that one of his greatest accomplishments, obviously, was that he is the founder, the first legislation to file on behalf of black people, reparations. So that's basically what we know about our brother. I could tell you many stories about our relationship, but I don't want to take all. I think that if you have any questions about our brother, then I'll be here to answer them. But we lost a good man. We lost a faithful friend when he passed in January 22nd, 2022, at the age of 84. Yeah.
So tell us, in your thoughts, my brother, it's very obvious that something has happened. And what I mean by that something, surely there are a few politicians or, for lack of a better word, elected officials. Of course, our brother Alton Maddox used to call them selective officials. We had, like here in Philadelphia, for those of you who heard some of our broadcasts this past week or conversations, we talked about David P. Richardson, state representative David P. Richardson. And so with that, we played a clip from him, one of his last speech. Well, no, not one of his last speech, actually, that took place just a few weeks before the Million Man March. And he talked about how he was a black man first and then a politician. Right. And I'm saying that's the kind of people that some of us were around. So my question is, what happened? What is and yes, I know COINTELPRO. I know, you know, some other things came in. But at the same time, what happened? Because we used to have people in our community that really did represent our best interests and not just this little fluff stuff. I'm talking about real serious kinds of things, and like we're talking about with Senator Owens. What, in your opinion, in your thought, and the reason why I'm asking, because we have a position, and the position is we critique the things that we need to critique and discuss and examine, and it's not to belittle it or try to throw shade at it. Our position is to examine it so that we can see what went wrong or what happened, and then it enables us to look at how do we need to move forward, you see, because something has to be done. And so we're examining these things now to take a good look at what it is we now need to do, because we need to run our own candidates. And when I say our own candidates, I mean the candidates that is going to represent our interest specifically. Now, we understand that there's a democracy and they have to represent all of their constituents. We got that part. We know that. However, other groups of peoples make their position clear about what they want. There's a community or communities that make very clear what they want, you see. And most politicians oblige them. And I'm saying for us as black folks, we need to make sure that we come up for the future with key positions that is relevant and only for our people, particularly given the fact that we're the only ones that were kidnapped and brought here. And yes, we know that there were people already here. We got that. Our people are already here. We got that part too. But at the same time, we're the only folks that was kidnapped and brought here. And so on that point, there has to be a very unique kind of thing that happens in that regard. So with that said, Dr. Davis, what is your thought? And you being, you know, professionally and, of course, again, as a black man, you can give me either one of those areas. What do you think has happened? And what do you think we now need to do to produce the kinds of folk that we need for the future, for now and for the future?
I don't know that we will get the gains. I don't know that we can get the gains that we want to get to and want to realize through political power. And there's many examples that I could point to where the gains that we need to make is not going to be dependent upon political power. If you look at different communities, they, like the Japanese community, for instance, they were a very prosperous community, and they never had political power. The Chinese, they've become a very community, but they've never had political power. The Irish had great political power, but they never made a great cultural influence in the places where they had political power. We, as African Americans, as black people, have reached the very pinnacle of political power. And where are we still? I think that we sort of lost our way, in a sense, because when we talk about reparations, there's a form of reparations that we really need to make. That I heard you say it first, and that is reparations when it comes to education, knowledge. We have sort of dropped the ball when it comes to what it means to have knowledge that will result in self-development through attaining the things that would make us a cohesive black community and to get the things that we want to see happen in our community. Many of these things are bound to the culture that we have been afflicted by, because when we look at ourselves, when we look within ourselves, and I think this is where we need to look, we need to start looking within ourselves to find out why the family is breaking down. Why is it that in our generation, Empress, you know, when we were growing up in the 50s and 60s, you know, 70% of black families had mothers and fathers. And we'd be lucky now if we see 30% of our families that have mothers and fathers. When we look within ourselves and we, you know, we talk about the genocide and we talk about, you know, how we are being decimated by racism and so forth and so on, but the greatest cause of death in our communities is from abortions.
Is what?
We are abortions, black abortions.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you know that since Roe versus Wade, we have had over 25 million abortions in the black community? I know this is not something that is popular to look at, but we, you know, we are 13% of the population, and we are responsible for 39% of the abortions in this country. And if that's not genocide, I don't know what is. There's a breakdown in our moral fabric when it comes to the family, when it comes to our value as a people. We don't value ourselves. We have lost our sense of value, I think, and political power is not going to get it for us. I think that it is grassroots movements like the ones that we're trying to do here that needs to be needs to come into focus to raise the consciousness of our people, because it's not going to be done through political power. It's going to be done by a grassroots movement and trying to bring this issue to our people. We need to bring this issue to our people. We need to bring this thing that's happening in our urban areas where we're destroying one another through violence, through drug abuse, and so many other curses that we find ourselves afflicted with now more than we've ever had when I was growing up or in our parents' generation. We didn't see these things happening, but they're happening now. And we need to look within ourselves and start addressing them, because these are things that we're not bringing to the attention of our people. And it's happening, and it's real. And it's affecting us, and it's affecting us in ways that we don't realize. And we wonder why these things are happening. Well, this is why. We need to elevate our ethical and moral compass and become a righteous people. We can holler and scream, jump up and down, all that we want, but we have to start looking within, because if the moral fabric of our culture is destroying us, then it's time for us to have a rebirth of some sort, a spiritual rebirth, spiritual reckoning, coming to terms with these very real disparities within our culture, within our communities. That's my view. Now, that's the thing that I want to bring to the attention of our people, that we can holler genocide all we want, but what are we doing to ourselves? You know, we can talk about all these things that we feel we're being oppressed from or by, but we're doing it to ourselves probably worse than they could ever imagine. Matter of fact, they're just watching us, letting us do it, and we're trying to. So, that's my view. I know that my view may be sort of controversial and maybe not something that we might want to hear, but that's my view. You asked my view.
No, Baba, listen, we're here to have conversation and dialogue, and everyone has the right, as far as I'm concerned, to voice and also share. And so we want to exchange dialogue, views, opinions, because this is how I now view this thing, which I have for a while, but now I'm getting ready to implement what it is that we've been working on, and it's this. There is a estimated 365 degrees. Now, whether it is or not, we don't really know all of that, but we know it's a reference point. And so the point is this. You know, with 360 degrees, obviously, you know, there are variations, right? And so it's all good. It's all a part of the whole. So there's no one opinion or no one of this or that in many things. And we have to now be mature enough to know that. You see, if we have a doctor or a physician, well, that physician might be ear, nose, and throat, eyes, feet, you know, whatever, you see. And so we've got to grow up and recognize that I don't have to agree with what you say or all of it or part of it. That's not it. But there's something in there 9 times out of 10. If you have a black perspective, or at least, you know, something that lends you to that, 9 times out of 10 is something that you will say that is, you know, applicable to the whole. So my point, family, is this. We welcome your opinions, and we can differ. We're grown. All right, we're grown, so we can differ in opinions. It's okay, as long as the outcome or what we're trying to focus on doing is what it is. That will be the real, you know, thing that brings us through whatever complications, difficulties, or whatever. That's going to be the thing, and so it's all good. So again, my brother, you know, I agree with all of what you said, and I disagree with all of what you said, and that's okay. For me, I'm not going to more or less, and this is in response to what you said, I know that the system impact on thinking, it conditions our people. It has conditioned. Some of us were able to not be as programmed. I'm one of those people. But it wasn't because, see, I was fortunate in that manner because some things happened in my life where, you know, I was not able to be introduced to society in that kind of way where it would have had a kind of impact on me. So my point is there are different variables. And so what we're doing to each other is, and this is just my vantage point, my opinion, what we're doing to each other is majorly as a result of what has happened to us. And so it's like anything else. If a person has cancer or heart disease or some other malady, ailment, that has to be treated, or they'll continue to fester and grow. So our malady has never been, it's never been treated. It has only grown and become exasperated, you see. So keeping these things in mind, I have to look at what are we going to do about it. So this is why I ask these questions, because for me, it's always good to hear, you know, what others are saying, thinking, because, again, some of that is going to be relevant. It's going to be applicable. And so I appreciate, you know, your thoughts. I appreciate your concept. I think we're really, historically, we have been one of the most morale people in this country, you see, and ethical too. And I dare say, and I hate to say this, but where has that gotten us? In reality, I mean, we got to start telling the truth now, right? I mean, you know, most of our people, at least it has been, they had a very serious, you know, religious and for some spiritual belief. So most of us came up with that. So we've got to ask ourselves, is that really where it broke down at? You see, because we had all of that going on and then some. But there's some other dynamic. And this is the kind of stuff that we want to start talking more about and getting into. What are the things that have happened? Could it maybe possibly be an element that has also been introduced into our psyche and or society that triggered, you know, other things? I mean, these are some of the things, particularly those who are in mental health and other areas. These are some of the things folks need to start looking at. And lastly, and I'm going to come back to you, my brother, we already have had people who have broke something down to us. This is why I'm really kind of disturbed about some things, because between Dr. Amos Wilson, Dr. Bobby Wright, Dr. Nathan and Julia Hare, Dr. Richard King, and others, Dr. Francis Quest Welsing, we've been given some pretty good insight into some things. Well, how much of that are we actually utilizing? How much of that are we actually applying to what we're doing? You see? So anyway, these are some of the things that we want to now begin. We're raising the bar, by the way, family, in case you haven't noticed. We're raising the bar now. MWM, people who have been talking to me for the past couple of days, they know I'm done, y'all. And what I mean by that, nonsense, excess nonsense, don't come to me with it, please. Because I've just spent a whole decade allowing certain things to happen, and I had to do that. But now I'm not doing that. So don't come this way with a bunch of nonsense. I will direct you somewhere else, you know, because a bunch of stuff people can go and do, and I know of a whole lot of them. And so I'll be gracious enough to say, you know, here's something you might, here's an entity or a group or whatever that you might feel a little more comfortable with. Because for us right now with MWM and the people that we are connecting to, we are on a mission, and that mission is to bring our people forward in every kind of way possible. And along with that mission is, if you get in the way, that's a conversation we'll have another time. Anyway, moving right along. All right.
Let me just comment on what you just said there, Empress.
Sure.
I embrace everything you say. I embrace everything you say. I am committed to this movement that you had initiated in 1997 and
yes,
that you're bringing to fore again. I'm committed to it. The reason why I'm committed to it is because of my spirituality.
Yes, sir.
My spirituality says to me that it says two things. I cannot rise higher in my person. I cannot arise no higher in my spirituality than the mothers in my community.
Oh,
the first person that we ever called God was my mother.
Mm.
That's the first person any of us have ever called God was our mother.
Mm.
Whether we be like, I cannot rise higher in my spirituality than the black woman. Black people will not arise in any higher spirituality than the black woman. That's my belief. That's my philosophy, number one. Number two,
okay,
if the black woman is not free, no one is free. I don't mean just black people. Nobody's free. If the black woman is not free, Africa will never be free. Black people will never be free. That's another one of my part of my spirituality and why I believe this is very important. What you are bringing together here. That's why I'm committed to it.
Yes.
I came into this consciousness when I went to Mama. That is when I went to Africa.
Yes.
And when I heard you talking about what you were trying to do, I was ashamed because I didn't know about it. But when you were talking about it, you know what I said? I hear my mama call.
Mm.
I hear my mama. And when I say I hear my mama calling, I'm talking about more than just Mama Africa. I'm talking about the spirit in my black woman, and which in so many ways encapsulate and inspire. So I you're Empress in more than one way to me. And I think that, you know, we need to capture that spirituality. And not, when I say spirituality, I'm not talking about religion.
Yes, yes.
All right? We love us from Jesus. I've never met any black people that love Jesus on this planet than black people. But, you know, we don't know what that means.
Right.
We really don't know what that means. You know, it's more than religion. It's basically love. We need to show love one for another. We need to stop being angry with one another, and we need to learn how to forgive one another. All right, and that's the basis of where I think we must begin when it comes to our spirituality. I would like to have this conversation in a different, you know, venue maybe, perhaps, where we can discuss matters, you know. But before I leave, I just want to say one more thing with respect to our brother, Bill Owens.
Yes.
The City Council of Boston has made a reparations task force based upon the legacy of Bill Owens. The new mayor of Boston, Michelle Wu, has formed a reparations task force based upon the consciousness that Bill Owens introduced into this community. I just wanted to let you all know that the legacy of Bill Owens will always be there, and it will go forward. So that's the latest with respect to what's happening with the reparations here in Massachusetts. So I thank you for being a witness here and to converse and to share with you, and I wish you all well. Thank you.
Well, I thank you. I thank you, my brother, for, you know, again, your words are heartfelt, and this is the kind of energy that we're bringing forward. We want to connect, and not just want to, we are connecting with folk who are similar and of like minds. We might have different approaches. We might have different, you know, different other kinds of aspects of it. But the end game is relatively the same. And so these are the things that we're taking into consideration. We've been asked to be tolerant of others. And as you just said, we have to be more tolerant with one another. But at the same time, and over the years, people have said, oh, that sister, she's so angry. Well, if you live in America and you're not angry, to me, there's something wrong with you. Now, how you exercise that. Yeah, I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, we are ostracized. Those of us who take certain positions, we become ostracized or criminalized or demonized because folk are just, and I'm going to say this word, y'all, so don't get offended, folks are punk. I have to say that because, you know, again, I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, and so I can no longer sit back as a black woman when I know that there are black men who have given their lives, and black women too, but as a mother, there's black men and women too that have given their lives, which is Dr. Matul Shakur has just become an ancestor. This man gave his life for us, for those that don't know. And he proved his point in assisting Sister Asada Shakur to be free. Now, y'all tell me who y'all know did that like that. So we got to stop playing. And don't get me wrong. It's all relevant. It all helps. But I'm saying there has to be something in this mix now that has a certain caliber, that has a certain type of tenacity and courage. It can't just be all Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. It can't be all that. And I'm not trying to, you know, be despairing about, that's all relevant because, and this is what I tell people, because I hear some people say, no, look, another march, I ain't going to no more marches. And I'm like, Negro, please, how did you get started? Because I know how I got started. I went to some rallies as a student. I went to some marches. So give people the opportunity to grow. Just because you might be stuck or don't want to do something, that's okay. But what about other folks who have never had those experiences, who are able to interact with others, who are able to grow, develop? I'm not saying that's all you do or should do. Of course it isn't. But don't try to take the opportunity or the capability for someone who has never experienced certain things. And I'm not saying everybody should experience some things, by the way. But there's some things that is historic, that is tradition, and we need to not be trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater, as they say. So, Brother Sidney, I thank you for all that you've said and shared. And I'm feeling your sentiments. I appreciate what you said about your mother, because that's the energy synergy that we're bringing with this Million Woman World March. It is that. That's what we want folks to know and feel. We mama. We are the mother. We that's what we want folks to know. So, and lastly, we are coming in love, like mother would do, does do. However, be real clear about something. When you get out of hand or get naughty or whatever you want to call it, sometimes you got to get spanked. And then we'll give you a hug. But sometimes you got to get spanked. And brothers and sisters, let me tell you what's getting ready to happen with the Million Woman World March. Y'all going to see some spanking coming now. Because we've watched this thing very carefully, and what we have seen, it can't continue. It cannot continue. And we're going to go more in depth at another time about what's really going on and why. And as Brother Sidney alluded to or said, and others during the course of this week, this stuff got to change. Prince Amiel said some things the other evening about patriarchy and all of that. And again, I'm not going to get all into that tonight. We're going to let brothers, we're going to encourage black men to get with black men and these young males. That's y'all, some of that is your job.
That's right?
But we're going to set the apparatuses up for you to do that, just so you'll know. But what we're saying to black men, that's why we have a component called the Serious Brothers in Support, serious, but as in S-I-R-I-U-S, because we want you to bring the brilliancy of blackness. You see? Anyway, I digress. So I thank you again. And please feel free to stay right there for a moment or two or however long you'd like, if you'd like to chime in, because we're getting ready to bring a little bit of a younger set in just to show you we're well-balanced, y'all. Now, we talked earlier about our sister. Many do not know the name. Our sister and Jerry, and I wrote her name wrong in the initial publication or the printout that we went, and so the brother was kind enough, Brother Kwaku was kind enough to correct me, and it's in Jerry Al Ghani, okay? So just we always want to make sure we try to get our names correct whenever we can. So you heard me mention her earlier about she was actually my private security for the Million Woman March. And this is a sister, beautiful sister. See, as we proceed, we're going to do training, for lack of a better word, for our sisters. But it's going to be different from some of what people have seen in the past, meaning we don't want sisters to act like brothers or to, you know, pasture like brothers. We want sisters to be sisters, right? Like, y'all remember President Gaddafi? Well, do you remember who his security was?
Oh, yeah.
They were sisters. Right. They were sisters, okay? And they were like, they would, hey, y'all know.
But they were extremely you know, anyway, y'all get the point that I'm making. All right, we don't have to do this other thing like that. I mean, if that's what you want, that's okay. I'm not putting that down. But I'm saying grace and dignity and not necessarily a harsh approach is what we will be bringing now into the arena. And you will not necessarily know one's skills. I'll just put it at that. It will not be that obvious unless we want it to be. And I'm saying that, family, because I want people to know clearly how we're moving with this, so that when we now talk about our women and girls being violated, we're preparing now to be able to address some of that all across the board. Anyway, let's get ready to go to our next segment. And again, I was talking about Mama and Jerry, as many knew her. What people don't know, that even some that do know, don't know how tense she was in building, not just relationship, nation building. All right? She was, when she made transition, I'm going to have Brother Kweku Lumumba to come in shortly to talk really more about it, because he worked with her very closely in Atlanta. But she brought younger folks together, and she nurtured them and helped them to grow and develop, which is why he's going to come in and join us. Because, again, we want people to begin to see how we're moving with this Million Woman World March. And what Kweku, Brother Kweku, did not know is he my son now, you see, because that's how we used to do it, meaning when we knew that a sister – was doing something, and particularly with the youth, but could be doing something, period, that we felt was of value for the people. If something was happening that happened to her where she could not continue, we step it up and step in. And this is not what we're seeing today. Anyway, let's move forward. Wow. Brother Kweku, and I think he brought a little posse with him. So I think we got a couple of folks we're going to be bringing in a minute. Let me see. Hold on 1 minute. I got to make sure. Okay, I think I see you here. Yep, I'm seeing a couple of folks, so bear with me, family. In the meantime, while I make sure I have the correct contact for Brother Kweku, I know I do. I just got to pull it up. Brother Sydney, before we get ready to go to our next segment. Let me just ask you real briefly, and we're going to come back to you with this because it's all connected, because many are aware now, or more are aware now, that we will be launching soon the Decade for African People, or the Decade of Return, rather. And that's a Million Woman World March initiative that'll be launched. We'll kick it off. We'll announce it this year, but it'll go into effect in 2025 and will run through 2035. And we plan to go to at least 25 countries. So Brother, just take a few moments. I know you have a conference coming up this month. Could you just give us just briefly, because I'm going to bring you in on another session where we're just going to talk about that, because we want to support it. We want to be involved in it in whatever kind of way. And by the way, family, Monday, for those who do not know, Monday is African Women's Day. Okay? It's African Women's Day. As the African Union declared it, Monday, July the 31st. So we'll be doing a special session on Monday with sisters from Cameroon and some other locations. So again, Brother Sydney, we will have a conversation with you a little later on. Okay. I see what's going on. Brother said he can't get in. Okay. So what we're going to do is I'm going to call him on our line through our boards, because he's saying he's trying to get in. on the three-way. Okay. All right. I don't know if you can hear me, Brother Kwaku. Just text me and let me know how you want me to proceed. If you're trying to get in on a three-way, I just need to know the number, and you could text me that, and then I can bring you all in. Okay? So I don't know if you can hear me, but if you can, text me and let me know which number you are calling in, or I can call you from the board if you'd like. Okay. All right, so with that said, Brother Sidney, if you'd be so kind, because I'm going to take a few minutes to try to connect with Brother Kwaku, share with the family what's coming up for you with the conference on the Igbo.
Okay, yes, thank you. On August 11 and 12, the Council of Igbo States in the Americas is having its annual worldwide cultural festival of the arts in Brunswick, Georgia. It is part of the 220th anniversary of the commemoration of Igbo Landing, that is Igbo Landing in St. Simon's Island, Georgia. You might want to Google that so that I don't have to spend a lot of time trying to explain what Igbo Landing is all about and why it's so significant, but just to briefly say something about it. It is the first freedom march that was ever done by Africans in the United States. It was a act of rebellion in which a boatload of Igbos who were captured and brought to the United States refused to go into slavery by walking back into the water and drowning themselves. And so this happened in 1803 in St. Simon's Island, Georgia, and this is the 220th anniversary of that event. And conference or this festival that we're having is the third such commemoration that has been done this year. The first one was done in Igbo Land in Nigeria. The second one was done there at St. Simon's Island in May on the very day when it happened. And the third celebration or commemoration is going to be in August 11 and 12, where the Council of Igbo States of America are going to be held, having a festival in commemoration of that event. And the reason why they are doing this is they are trying to bridge the gap between Africa and the descendants of Africans in the diaspora, in the United States in particular. I am the founder of the Igbo Landing Project, that is EBO. That's the anglicized spelling of the actual name of Igbo, which is I-G-B-O, Igbo. The G is silent. The Igbo Landing Project, you can find that. You can find out what that is all about if you just go to its Facebook page, and I'll just leave that there. If you go to the Facebook page of the Igbo Landing Project, you will find that what I am trying to do, what I've been trying to do since 2012, is bring the return of African Americans back to the motherland. When the Empress told me that she was going to announce the decade of return, you know, I was all over it. I jumped right on that. It was time has come where we must heal the disconnect that has existed as a result of the separation that occurred as a result of the slave trade and the separation and the disconnect that has happened as a result of the distance that exists now, not only in terms of geography, but in spirituality, connections, family connections, social connections, just about every way. We're trying to heal the disconnect. We're trying to build the bridge between Africans and the descendants of Africans who were taken captive from Africa. I am announcing the year of return, the decade of return at that conference, And I will also be announcing the decade of return. I'll also be announcing the decade of return when I take a contingent or representative portion of African Americans, Black Americans, to Evil Land next year. I'm the forerunner.
All right.
I'm here to make an announcement for you, with you. I'm committed to this thing because I've been trying to do this for the last, since 2012. When I first went to Evil Land, no one knew about Evil Landing. And now, since 2012, they have come into the consciousness of Evil Landing, the Ebos. And now they're trying to bring the community of African Americans together with Africans, heal the disconnect, to make the reconnection. So that's what it's all about, making the reconnection.
Wow, wonderful. All right.
You know, I sent you a couple of things in person, videos. Those short videos that I sent you were created by a 12-year-old child.
Yes.
This is what the genius and the ingenuity that inspires our children when they understand where they come from. And I think that once this consciousness takes hold, that it's going to transform our community. It's going to elevate our community, especially where we need to do the re-education, the reparations of education, the reparations of knowledge that our children must have that will elevate them and give it higher conceptions of duty and responsibility, development, investment in their human capital as African, as black people. And this is what we sorely need. And this is what I see as my work in connection with what you're doing. And I am very, very excited to be a part of it. And this is what we're trying to do. And we're beginning with this reconnection with the African Americans and Africans, Black Americans, at this festival. So I don't know if it's going to be hybrid or not, but it's going to be live. And it's going to be happening. It's going to be the greatest deluge of Africans ever in this area, in Georgia, in August 11 and 12.
Okay. So if you would be so kind, my brother, share with me again, because I have my pen now. Could you please share with me again the word that in the Igbo language that when we say ashe, meaning, so it shall be, let it be, it is as such. Could you share with us the word that is utilized in the Igbo language?
Well, I'll spell it first. It is
okay.
I-S-E-E.
Okay.
And it's pronounced Ise.
Okay.
When you speak the African language, especially Igbo, intonation is very important. It's not I-C. It's Ise. And it's like Yoruba and Igbos are cousins. In Nigeria, we're cousins. They have Afa. They have Ifa. The Yoruba have Afa, and the Yoruba have Ifa, and that's where Ashe comes from the spiritual language of Ifa. Mm-hmm. And the Igbo have Afa. So Ifa is I-F-A. Afa is A-F-A. They're spiritual cousins. They say Ashe in the Ifa spirituality, and they say Ise in the Afa spirituality. So they're cousins. So we in the Igbo dialect of saying Amen, which is in the Hebrew dialect. Different languages have their affirmation words of. In the Igbo, it's Ise, I S E E.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Wonderful. And family, one of the things that we've been conveying is that as we proceed in getting ready for the decade of return, we will be having classes and sessions for folk that are interested in the various locations that they plan to go or that we plan to go. We want to make sure that they are able to go there with some information and knowledge and comprehension of that locale, both the language, the cultures, the spiritual systems, et cetera. So we're not going just as some tourists or whatever. We're going to connect, reconnect, build, whatever. This is why, again, today, big shout-out to Dr. Antoinette Harrell, who is our in-house genealogist. And again, for those who are interested in developing their family tree, we will have someone, a couple of people actually, but she's the lead on it, to help folks to be able to structure and do what they need to do to make sure that their family tree, they know, we must now know to a greater extent. And with Dr. Harrell's assistance, she will help us to be able to research to a greater extent, to look at census reports, to look at other kinds of documents so that we can get a better grasp on our history, your personal direct link. And of course she does the DNA piece, so again, pick up the Sister Deidre because she connected us with Dr. Harrell. And so this is what we've been talking about, developing relationships that we know is going to connect us to the black dots. And so again, we're going to bring this, these things forward that we've been talking about. So we're still waiting for Brother Kwaku. I'm not sure what's going on. Let me see. He's saying he's having some network issues. Okay. Oh, they said it's a storm where they're at. That's what it is. They're in Atlanta. And he said, I'm having network issues probably because of the storm. Okay. So... let's see, how can we proceed? So family, bear with me. I'm going to try to see if I can maybe reach him by way of our boards. Let's see if that works. So, hold on 1 minute. I'm going to try to bring him in this way because he's saying they're having some technical problems. And again, today we had Dr. Harrell with us. We're going to be bringing Pastor Gaddy in the next time she comes, but she was on a tight schedule today, so we weren't able to cover a lot of what we wanted to do, but the process is in place. Hold on one moment. Let me just try. All right, fellas, we're going to try to bring in Brother Kwaku so that we can have some kind of dialogue, hopefully, about Queen, because she was also called Queen in Jerry Alagani. So let's try to get him in this way. Hopefully, we will be able to do it. Let's see. Okay, maybe not. All right, well, today was the day for technical issues, so we're still having it, but at any rate, we tried on this end. But as I said, he said that there's a storm going on there, so it has probably interrupted with the capability. Okay. There we go. Okay, family, so listen, what we're going to do is open up the lines for you. If you have a question or a comment that you would like to share, I think I see Brother Reed in queue. And Brother Reed, if you wanted to share something about Senator Bill Owens, you certainly can do so. I just need you to press 1 so that I can find you a little quicker. And as a matter of fact, that's how I met Senator Owens. Brother Sidney, I was invited, Brother Reed and our Chicago family invited me to join them in Gary, Indiana. And I think this was maybe 2012. I'll talk with Brother Reeve on that. And so, you know, I said, well, yeah, okay. And it was the commemoration for the first National Black Political Convention that took place in Gary, Indiana. And I went to Gary. Again, it was Brother Reeve and the family from Chicago that asked me to come. And that's how I met Senator Owens, right? So hold on. I think I see Brother Reeve. Yep, I got him. Okay, let's bring in Brother Reeve and fellows. This is our Chicago family, y'all. So I'm going to have him to share something about Senator Owens. Hey, Brother Reeve.
Hey, what's up, Queen?
You know. You know.
Hey, they know. You know. That's for sure.
Hey, they get ready to know what something that they ain't going to want to know in a minute. Okay, because we're getting ready to bring this thing to a whole nother level. But how you doing tonight, my brother?
I'm doing blacknificent. That's what I'm doing.
I know that's right.
Trying to raise the bar. Black excellence to blacknificent. And
right.
As Martin Luther King says, we got to get the language right.
I'm just excited.
But you mentioned rest in peace, Senator Owens, and man, just a trooper, warrior, longevity. I mean, I had the pleasure of we did a black political convention. I can't think when it was, but Brother Pleasant Steph and I, we did one of the second of two black agendas early in Chicago. The year that Ms. Farrakhan was down, Nick, long story short, one of the brothers came back from Dixmoor. He was the mayor of Dixmoor. He went out to Boston with Senator Owens, who was birthed out of the first black political convention, convened another group for a convention and brought some of our brightest minds together, and they put together a black agenda that was similar to what took place in Gary that he was birthed from, and it was really comprehensive. So when the brother came back from Dixmoor and spoke at our black political convention that we were doing, he said he had got a document from that event, and so he emailed it to me, and I looked at it and dope. Over the years a while, and so I brought together a group of people around that agenda with our group, Dr. Frazier, and all of us here, and me and James Hill, who was instrumental in getting Harold Washington elected, who's my mentor. He was one of the major players. So I asked him, do we need to do another black agenda? Seems like it's time. He said, why? I said, well,
right.
We got all these agendas. It's time to put something on the ground. And so the latest and the greatest was Senator Owens' black agenda. So we got that together, and I put together a research team. And we called Senator Owens to ask him, did he mind? What was he doing with him, and what was happening? He said, well, it's land dormant. And if you guys want to take it and run with it. So he authorized us, and he gave us the rights of the charter, and we took it off and running. And me being the agitator, activist, politics, and politicker, we started running, and we put together a document with you, some of the best brains that's out here in education, and it's a breathing document, because when I read all these black agendas since the 1800s, Niagara Falls, Philadelphia, and all the other ones that I looked at, we consolidate that into a breathing plan that I took it off the table and activated as an activist. So I think it's unique coming from me to ground up in Chicago, and we've been working with brothers in St. Louis, yourself. And so Senator Owens blessed us with that, and then I'm just proud that I was able to get you the Million Woman March, and which makes me the best organizer in the world to put you and him in Gary with a black woman, Karen Freeman Wilson, to hold it. It was a hostile takeover. We took it over. So that's a little bit about Senator Owens. And rest in peace, my brother.
Yes, indeed.
So
yes, indeed.
It's just an honor to be on here. That brother was really very, he just really wise and laid back, and he was sharp.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Brother Reeve. And, you know, I remember that day so well because he hit it. I mean, he, like, threw it. I mean, he just brought it, you know. And then I hit it, And then we looked at each other. We was like, what? Yeah. You said what? And he looked at me like, yeah. You said what?
And he was on the far left, and you was on the far right, and both of y'all came to town to bang him up there. Y'all lit him up on that stage. And he hadn't been back to Gary since the convention. That's why I'm just thanking God. Having you there was a blessing, and my sister, and then having him come there and me be the blessing of making sure he get there with our team. But I also want to say, so he came back to Gary before his departure and was able to come back where he was birthed to be center mm-hmm. on and go on to be who he was. That's deep.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. So with that said, Brother Reed, earlier we were talking about what is it we need to do. Now, you know, you and I have had some conversations about some things, and I mean some real deep conversations about the Negropeans and the politicksters and so forth. So with that said, because, you know, we got to get to the nitty-gritty now. With that said, what is it that we're going to do? Now, Sister Keisha, she texted me early, and she said, we got to do our own thing, meaning we've got to begin to bring forward some independent parties. I mean, what do we have to lose? So what's your thought about that, Brother Reed?
Well, we already lost our mask, so we won't be losing that. Well, to get you, so I want to share with you, my theory is Ken Bridges is rest in peace, Mata, and this is what people forget. Brother Ken, quit trying to get everybody. Just get 20% of the people got good sense.
Right. And
then say
the others,
because we influencers and we trendsetters. So the 20 going to say the 80, they copycats anyway.
So it's
so
interesting.
That's one thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead, Brother Reed, finish that.
No, I'm just saying, to answer your question, is the remnants is coming, and then the 20%. And then God is reading out the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and the situation is sad, you see. But we getting there, and he in Chicago, he raining every week, is 110. He washing dirty people's souls, and they worry about their basement when they need to be cleaning their soul. So God putting hitting on us, he hurting us up here. And everybody thinking something, but he putting fire brimstone. So he's separating us so that we can get ready. And our young people in Chicago, as much as y'all think they're being violent, they're the hate, created, and they are pushing on them people. They ain't scared of the police. They ain't scared of nobody. But we just need to channel that engine, as the brother was saying, when our young people grab it and get conscious with it, their violent behavior and their aggressive behavior is fit for the time. God created the behavior. We were supposed to cartel it into what God needed as an army, but we'll get there. So as I told you, week before, we had 800 black boys marching down the street, no problem. Put 200 more black boys together, and then no shooting, no killing. So they ain't talking about them, but we're pulling ourselves together, and we're weeding the ones out that really want to be free, and the others are going to be sitting on the fence or going to be in some bad shape.
All right.
And so let me capitalize on that while you're there. So August 1st, Brother John William Templeton in 2004 launched the National Black Business Month. And that's been 19th year anniversary, be Tuesday. So as you say, what are we doing? I'm galvanizing all the Black Wall Street, Black Chamber, Karma, Soul City Corps, anybody over a chamber, and everybody listening. You should be celebrating the 19th anniversary founded by Brother John Templeton and them guys and William Templeton. They wanted to do an inventory. So it's time for us to take inventory every August. So we just found out in Chicago, Black Chicago Eats, we got 400 black restaurants in Chicago. We just got 3 new black grocery stores. You know, we celebrate that. And then we just got 10 new, brand new ballrooms. So there's some things. And then we've mentioned in Gary, former Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson, she is president of Urban League. She just announced the State of Black Chicago Report 2023. And we just did a survey with Chicago State University on small businesses. And it talked about violence, depopulation, and business. So she'll be giving that address, Sister Kathy. So I'm bringing all the chambers, God's will, from all over the city to talk about what the report looks like, and how do we redirect that $1.3 trillion and see that, see what God do. Let's turn within, do for self, and then we see what God. So I think once we do that, God will manifest and bring them people to their feet. We just got to unite. And again, out of all the people coming, I just need 20%. We can go to work.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned Brother Ken Bridges, because tomorrow we're doing a rally, and it's just a kickoff to start getting people acclimated to the fact that we're going after a building here in Philly. We've done enough research, and we know where there is property owned by various cities, because, you know, I've been to Chicago. I just talked to, oh, I talked to Prince Amiel yesterday. He was on our call, so I'm coming to Chicago next month. But the point is, we've been to several cities, Detroit, Chicago, we know some of the things that is going on in these cities, and we've selected at least seven. We actually have 10 now, but we say we have seven sister cities. And the point is, we now know how this thing called gentrification works, how it has been working for a while. And what I mean by that is there's a national agenda. And so we know what that is now to a greater extent. The point is, we began to look at property, buildings, et cetera, that's owned by local municipalities, state, and federal. So as we proceed with the We Charge Genocide 21, our position is for reparations, we need to be getting some of these buildings, some of these properties, you see. And we've been taught for at least 50 years by Queen Mother Moore and others, free the land. So when does this just become a slogan and not a plan of action? And they did. The RNA did do this, by the way. But we now have to bring it forward, and we can do it in a way now that represents reparations. So when you hear us now talk about the We Charge Genocide 21, we're also saying that as a part of reparatory justice, we're looking at the obtainment of property owned by the government as a part of our reparatory justice. So again, in coming to Chicago, Brother Reeve, just to recap with you for a minute, Chicago closed 150 schools. Is that correct? Brother Reeve, did I lose you?
I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm
saying,
yeah,
they tried to say it about 50, but the total came up to around 150 if you look at it.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Okay, and they fired 30,000 black teachers.
Right, okay. So family, what we're saying is, again, we are beginning to synchronize various cities that have a relatively high population of black folks. So while folks talk about a Black United Front or a Black Agenda, and we do, we're connecting with these various entities to bring it together. How are we going to do that? Oh, Million Woman World March. So while folks trying to, you know, scurry around to figure out how we're going to connect this, we can tell you how we're going to connect it, because we'll create the venue, the space, the place to bring it. You see? And who else better than Mother? So now, for folks that have proposals or suggestions when I say suggestion, I ain't talking about, we need to come together. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you guys and stuff that you didn't really thought out. You didn't do some research on it. You didn't even know how this need to go, that kind of stuff. Bring it. Again, why folks dismiss 2 million black women and thought y'all going to get away with that like that? That was a bad move. Let me tell you right here, right now. That was a bad move. And I'm in the city of the Boule. Let me tell y'all that's always checking me out. Go take this back to Monta. Bad move, y'all. I digress. I'm sorry. Anyway. So the point is, Brother Reeve, we're going to bring this stuff. I'll see you next month. That's the bottom line. I'll see you next month, you and Dr. Frazier, and we'll sit down and start looking to see how we can move some things forward. Again, I can't talk about business and not talk about how that's going to be applicable to other areas of things. We still have political prisoners, you see. And so I cannot proceed and talk about one thing, which, you know, I have to look at, there are people who gave their lives. We talk about ancestors when we talk about people who do certain things, but yet we're letting people who demonstrated their commitment and capability, we're letting them linger or languor in these dungeons. And so Mama's saying, no more. We can't. So we're developing the cadres to help at least begin to address that. And by the way, sisters who are interested in interacting with sisters who are incarcerated, either presently or formerly, we have a unit now for you. The Million Woman Ministries will be going into some of the facilities on a national level where the women are. Because of most of our research shows that most of the programs or initiatives that deal with prisons, they're not going into the women's prisons, y'all. Why is that? Well, we know why, but I'm saying that has to stop. So, sisters, when we come together in October, this is not just about a march. It wasn't about just a march when we did it in 97. Well, you definitely going to know it ain't about a march now. And lastly, and we're going to go back to my brothers, what we realized is because of the gatekeepers and others, we're going to deal with that now. So very soon there will be special sessions, meetings, organizing for sisters who are in the unions, you see. Sisters who are in other arenas, professional arenas and so forth, we will make sure that they have a specific area in what we're doing for that week to bring whatever they want to bring into the mix. So again, sisters who are in unions, be them organizers in unions or they are members of unions, I'm sure they still got something to say. And to bring that together on the national level, I don't know. Reed, do you know, why do people think we was playing? I don't know. Anyway. So, moving right along.
Empress, can I share something with you right quick?
Surely.
Can I share one more thing? Is okay. So,
yes.
What we're doing now, we got two black legislators in Chicago, three. One is recognizing Black Wall Street at the state level every year, recognized on the floor. Down in Springfield, let the white people know it plays as a rep for it. And we have two other legislators, Napoleon Harris, that's in the South Suburbs. They have written legislation for what you just said, any population of black in a certain area, the building, the housing, and assistance with financial. So what we're doing is just deny the Tulsa, Oklahoma family, again, their access to reparations. So what I'm thinking that we should do in the Million Woman March is the political convention is coming here, Democratic political convention. We're going to be organizing a Black Wall Street commission and taking those pieces of legislation. And as you know, I want some legislation for blacks to get jobs in state government. And then we have reparations, Brother Willie Wilson and Cam then put on city council. So we have also, we have reparations in Springfield, commission on reparations that passed in Springfield. So we're going to be consolidating that and putting people together. So when the convention come here, we should be going to be delegations to put on the floor every major city. Like you said, we want reparation programs and projects based on some of the legislation we have here in different places. While we're going to have all the mayors and all the governors in one place trying to lobby for our vote. I think that'll be a good platform for us to be talking about why y'all not giving the black reparations. So we'll talk more, but I wanted to share that to the audience.
Okay. Yep. Good thing.
Because the convention will be here.
Yeah, okay. Great. And again, by us doing the Million Woman World March in October, y'all, that means we will be ready for the next presidential election. Now, note, I'm not advocating any of that. I'm talking about being able to be in a position to parlay. because all politics, as we are taught, is also local. So this whole machinery is connected to other things. The point is, for our sisters, we created now something called the Million Woman Party. That's a national entity that will do training, education, examination, research, and so forth on a national level. It's connected to another party, which is for all of our people, but we're going to deal with that one right now first. So this way, sisters who want to run in their city, be it city council, be it, you know, there's so many other offices that people don't talk about. Here in Philadelphia, we got something called Register of Wills. We have Sheriff's Office. These are elected offices. And so even though it's not the city council or the state rep or whatever, areas where we need people because we need that information and we need access, greater access. So we have to sit down and critique these things. What do we want to do? So this is the kind of dialogue that we've been having and that we're ready to move forward on. And this, again, in October, we'll literally be having caucuses, for lack of a better word. I don't really like that word. We got to come up with an African word for that. But we will have forums and sessions that will focus specifically on very specific issues. For example, when whoever's running, we need to be in the position to tell black women in particular, if they're not looking at our agenda that we put together in October and then in March when we do the political endeavor, then we need to tell people don't vote for them. You see? But we have to be organized in a way to do that. And again, we're not talking about advocating, voting, and all that. That's not it. What we're talking about is to be in position. Be in position, have an agenda, because you do know that folks are going to vote. And so rather than to not do anything or say anything, we need to at least start putting something out there that makes it at least seem like we are trying to be organized or trying to have a platform or trying to have an agenda. And that is what we plan to do. So, again, we've been working on this for a while. We've been asking people to support. We could tell you who has and who has not because we kept good accounts of that. You know, I can tell you what day we sent you the email or the text or whatever. So y'all think y'all kind of away with stuff. Not you all here, but folks would be talking all this black stuff and how we need to come together and unify and this and that. Well, let me tell you, they don't know. Put forth those efforts to do that. And in many instances, it has fallen on deaf ears, and not because what we were saying or doing wasn't righteous or worthy. It was because the cliquism and the other kinds of stuff that has interfered with our growth and development has taken a greater, has become a more of a thing than us fighting for justice and liberation. Bottom line, anyway, let's go back to Brother Reed, and I think we still have Brother Sidney with us. So, Brother Reed, listen, real quick before you go, the black agenda, how can folks, as a matter of fact, Dr. Fraser just sent me something a couple of days ago. I didn't have a chance to look at it yet, and it's real condensed. I mean, it's only like a couple of pages. So how can folks, you know, learn more about the black agenda? I know there's a website, so share that with us.
Okay, National Black Agenda Consortium. NationalBlackAgendaConsortium.org. You can get a hard copy, which is classic, $25, and then you get a paperback, $15, and then you can get an e-copy for free and download it. And one of the things that we pride ourselves, and we're not the only agenda, but because of the work I've been doing and the people I know like you and other people on the ground, ours was constructed from grassroots, from bottom up, and we dealt with policy. So when you pick up this agenda, you can take policies and legislation to use it to hold your elected official accountable in your community. So if you have a block club and you want to hold your alderman accountable, you can use it. If you have a state legislator or federal, You can ask them, are you with this black agenda that we own? If not, then we going with who's our best candidate, whether it be Republican or Democrat. We just got to get into the game. So it's a good peace-breathing document. We're getting support out of St. Louis, yourself. We don't have the only black agenda. We're not the only one. But we think what we put together from the ground up by reaching out to Philly and other places, it makes us a comprehensive, and I'm going to brag, I'm an organizer. I'm on the block. I ain't playing with these people.
Well, no, that's right. Well, that's our sentiment as well, Brother Reeve. And also, please know that one thing that we said earlier, that starting tomorrow, we will begin to start providing folks, those who are interested in being a part of our Recharge Genocide 21 project, we're creating a poll / survey for black elected officials throughout the U.S. We want to know, there's at least two questions. One is, what is your position on reparations? The second one is, what is your position on political prisoners? We want to know from them, given the information that we have readily available for them on both of those issues, on both of those topics. Our political prisoners are there because of government. Government. COINTELPRO, et cetera. And so that is a violation that we can prove, you see. And so the point is, we want to know from our black elected officials, what is their position? What are they prepared to do? Now, if they say they are against reparations or against our political prisoners being freed, then there's not a whole lot of other conversation we need to have. But we want it on record. We want to be able to report come October and then in March. October is the Million Woman World March. March is going to be National Black Women's Political Indaba. Political. It'll focus specifically on that, bringing an agenda together that we want to present to whoever running, wherever they're running. We need to collectively make some decisions on what we want to say as black women so these people can stop playing us. Because they're using our sisters to get into these offices. Our sisters are accepting the little trinkets for their vote. And it's not synchronizing to anything in our communities for real, for real. So there has to be some changes in that, and there's going to be. So with that said, we'll start tomorrow providing, it's a very limited information. Just do you support Reverend, you have their name, contact information, but the question is, do you, as an elected official, whatever that is, senator, state rep, congressperson, city council, as long as it's elected, we want to know, what is your position on reparations? And then if they say they're for it, then that lets us know we can call you up and have a conversation or schedule a meeting or what have you. If you say no, we'll need to take that any further. So we have to document these things now. We've got to hold people accountable. Stop letting people get away with just hoodwinking us, as Brother Malcolm taught us. Anyway, to y'all. Listen, no, let's bring some family folk in. Family, if you have a question, comment, thought, by all means, we welcome you to bring it. You can press 1 and let us know that you want to join the conversation. We certainly would welcome you to do so. I will be going on tour. Kind of a mini tour starting next month for August to let folks know more about the Million Woman World March, to start setting up some of these committees. Note, Million Woman World March, this is the kickoff, because we will be going into one of the CARICOM countries in 2024 and then, of course, to Africa in 2025, taking the Million Woman World March. So we have a 3-year plan that we are presenting, but it's really a 10-year plan. Okay, so just so folks know, this is not what they thought. This is something else here, and we've given people the opportunity to get involved. So I'm going to tell you right now, don't call me up now and talk about some stuff that you should have talked to me about 10 years ago or during the course of the past 10 years. because that's not going to work for you. This is a different reality now. Folks have shown us that they wait until people do a lot of work, and then they want to call you up, you know, and say, yeah, I want to get involved. Well, Negro, you could have got involved 5 years ago. So we're not doing that anymore. We're not allowing it like that. Anyway, if you all have a question or a comment, please press 1 now, and we would love to have you join us for the conversation. In the meantime, Brother Reed, what's going on with your new mayor?
He's Mexican.
How many millions did he give the immigrants? Remind me of that again, please.
Well, we got 300 over the apostolical Reverend Brazier, Bishop Brazier's son. And then we got had 200 across from Obama's church, Trinity Church, with them over there. And then we got them moving around. Then all our police stations laying on the floor. Now they kicked all our homeless people out the police station black. Now they got people from all over the country inside the police station with their clothes. They came here with their riches and everything. So actually the police station is the Statue of Liberty place where they came to Ellis Island in Chicago. So you start from there, then they find money. So the mayor, he signed an executive order to make sure the immigrants would be good, and then the next day they gave $51 million, which is not a lot, but you can't give them $50 million in front of us. And then, so this has been, as y'all get ready, this is one that just happened off the press. So I wasn't able to make it because I usually drive around there every day and look at it. So they have been accused of jumping over the fence. There's a senior building. So Jeff Ford used to own everything. Well, not everything, but Brazier, Leon Spinney, and owned a bunch of property over there. That's why the University of Chicago got together and ran Jeff Ford out. We know he has a history of other things, but he controlled property, so they got him out of there. But now there's some senior building there. The migrants are jumping over the fence and cussing our seniors out, black, throwing, busting their windows out. And then a month ago, somebody died in the building. And then they have the sex in the cars outside. And then they out there doing drugs and acting a fool. So Nobi Norris, my buddy, told me there's still some Blackstone Rangers over there. They went to see them people with them guns. Say, what y'all over here for? What y'all on? So that happened. So then Bishop had Grace's son had a meeting at the church. So they over there, lawlessness. And they jumping on, disrespecting our seniors in a predominantly black community. And they over there, welcome to America, smoking weed, getting high, having sex in the cars, and disrespecting our elders and all that kind of stuff. But that's the latest on the migration over here in Woodlawn, down the street from the Obama Library. And, you know, Camilla was here. 2 weeks ago, a week ago, Camilla, the vice president, she came here and was at the church. So that was the latest and greatest. And then the mayor was supposed to come. My guy's name is Pie Guy. He has a company. He's hired a bunch of young people to run his company. He has a great, the Pie Guy. He has a full restaurant, and he has a diva rehab. They sort of do a construction real estate. So the mayor was supposed to come on Tuesday to see the young people being trained when he's doing culinary and food. The mayor canceled and didn't come. And then on Thursday, he was supposed to come again to see the young people. I was there waiting on him, hoping he could come, and then he canceled out. So if you're asking about the mayor, we got young black children here who are being disappointed all the time when they get their high hopes up and nobody show up. The mayor firsthand promised to come on Tuesday, then promised to come on Thursday and did not come. So now how you think the children feel about being trusting of our elders and political process? So we ask them to vote, then they're going to be talking about, well, vote don't get you nobody to come see you doing good. So that's a little up to date. And again, they have passed a law to hire migrants to be the police. So they're laying in the police station homeless. The next year or this week, they're going to be superintendent of police. Captain at the police station in black community. That's the latest.
Okay. If the plot thickens. My goodness.
Yes,
we got a caller. We're going to bring in 1 minute. Caller at 1398. I'm going to bring you in 1 minute, but I just want to try one more time to see if we can get our brother. They text me and said that they're having some problems because of the weather. So I'm just going to see if there's a possibility we can get through on our line. So let's try. Never know. We try everything
Hello.
We can. Oh, greetings, Brother Kwaku.
Greetings, greetings.
Yes, we got you. How are you this evening?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. Well, listen, we don't have a lot of time, but I just wanted you to, if you have a few moments, to share, some things about our mama and Jerry. And family, before the brother shares that with us, I want to let everybody know, if you are joining us on our stream, live stream, you need to switch over to the podcast, and that means you need to dial in because you're going to lose your internet very shortly. That particular live stream is going to end in about 5 minutes. So you need to call the 319-527-6189 number, and that way we will be continuing on the podcast. So, okay, brother, please share with us some things about Mama and Jerry, Al Agani.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to first and foremost to just be here among just people who really appreciate our ancestors and those who contribute to our liberation, you know, in whatever way they can. And Mama and Jerry is definitely one of those who has done that, you know, in her lifetime. And, I seek to carry on the legacy in whatever way I can. And one of the main ways that I'm doing that is the radio broadcasting down in Atlanta, where she was doing that at WRFG, and being able to come in and continue that legacy, and hopefully live up to it. But I living up to her legacy is something that it's difficult because she did so much, you know, and everywhere you go, even if you never met her, you still hear her name, you still hear people talk about her, you know, if you're doing activism or organizing it, especially in Atlanta. It's inspiring because, you know, a lot of our people, they get the Hollywood image of this kind of work, you know, the kind of work that she did during her lifetime, and they get this, you know, they say, oh, well, we read about Dr. Martin Luther King, we read about the Fannie Lou Hamers, we read about those people because what they did in a period of time during the Civil Rights Movement in that era. But there's so many more that will never be in those standard history books. And some of them, we don't know their names. But some of them, their names carry on in the movement and in the organization.
That's right.
So if you come into it, then you're going to hear Mama and Jerry's name, whether you're doing radio broadcasting, whether you're doing youth work, whether you're doing reparations work. It's like her name is everywhere. It's like you're talking about, even you telling me that, oh yeah, she did security for me for the Million Women's March. I'm like, what? Like, you know, just seemed like she was everywhere, doing everything possible and setting up. You know, here's the thing that really impresses me about her. She was setting up legacy programs. So that the next generation could inherit something and continue the work. And that's, if I can't do anything else, I want to be able to do that.
I know that's right. That's what I'm talking about. And so, sisters, that's why, one of the reasons why we're doing what we're doing, because we have to ask ourselves, what legacies are we leaving our children? And I'm not just talking about our biological children. As women, what legacies are we leaving our children? And this is the question that's now going to be raised. And we're talking about that from the aspect of our communities, our families, of course, but also our communities. So when we were talking with Brother Sidney earlier, we talked about how, you know, our communities, our families, our communities are becoming so dismantled. Well, yeah, surely. And so the question has to be, what are we going to do? So sisters, as mother, we have to step it up. And again, it's not just our biological children. Remember, many of us, when we were coming up, you lived on a certain block or in a certain neighborhood, everybody would get on you, particularly the women, the sisters. So we have to begin to look at what we need to do. So going back to Brother Kwaku, so very briefly, because we got, I want to bring in the caller that I mentioned at 1398. I'm coming to you, caller, so stay right there. Just tell us briefly about the radio program that she started, that she gave you all the capability to communicate in an independent manner, certainly unapologetically. All right, y'all ain't mixing no words, because I knew the sisters, so I know y'all wasn't talking out the sides of your mouths. All right. These are the kinds of things we have to share. So just share a little bit about the program.
Well, I'd like to bring in my brother Kwame Ahuru, who was able to patch him in as well, to just talk about, you know, his connection with that program, the one that she was able to create for the youth out of that program, and, you know, just what that looks like. So, Brother Kwame, are you there?
Yes, yeah, I'm here.
Hey, brother, how are you?
All is well, man. I'm doing great.
Wonderful. So please, you have the mic.
Well, for me, man, I could talk for days about Mama and Jerry. Just because of that's the type of person she was, and I just think still is, because that energy is still around strongly. But when I first met her, my whole connection through it was she was down at Centennial Park, and she was getting some names to help her, because her program had been suspended for a week, and she was suspended for something that someone claimed that happened that shouldn't. So she was searching out for, you know, the process to get her back on the air and for some help. So I initially just came down to kind of help make sure that that kind of stuff happens, that this properly recorded and, you know, the mistake, whatever that little snafu was, doesn't happen again. And as soon as I got there, my second time, not the first time, but the second time I was there, I was sitting at the bottom of the table. She gave me a paper and I said, can you read this for me? And I'm just thinking, yeah, read it and look over it right there while we're talking. I told her, sure, yeah, I can read this. Dang, she turned the microphone right on, and I was on, I mean, I'm live on the air. Because when we talk about her giving you your duties and jobs and positions, that was one of the perfect examples, because she just turned it right on. And apparently she had a lot of trust in me, in my abilities, even more than I thought and felt. But it started there, and I just kept building and coming around and becoming more part of the program until, you know, it really became family. She made sure that myself and everyone who's on the program with me was, we were certified. We were taking the classes whenever they were available, because we were a certain part of the communication we were away from, but she always made sure that we were tapped in to all of it, always. So I know that we speak her name a lot, and we always say Mama and Jerry, Mama and Jerry Algani, Mama and Jerry. But we also have to remember, on that radio program, she went by another name that was truly, truly represented who she was, Sister Courage. And
that's
I
right.
Can never forget that. Sister Courage was, I mean, that, come on, the stuff that she did, she is, was, and still now is Sister Courage. So she just really inspired me a lot. She it opened my eyes a lot more to the different factions that we have to put our energies at, not only fighting but also representing, such as reparations. Is every second or third word out of her mouth was reparations. And now, and giving you information on Nkobo, making sure you're at an Nkobo meeting. So she's one of the ones who was just so, like, even as I was younger and looking at, you know, this revolution thing and this change and black folks, we coming together and doing this, everything that I saw it as from when I was coming up, she represented it. She did the work. She was always there. Brothers getting out of prison, she's out greeting them, welcoming them back into society. So much that she did. And just, I mean, at her, at, you know, being my elder, I was just really just amazed at just how she was just not stopping, not moving. There's times that she had been in, you know, accidents and other things happening. None of that stopped her from her works. None of, she had no excuses. Even if she may have had some issues going on, she never complained about them. And it was just really beautiful. They were very beautiful how she just, her and the whole family just opened up and kind of accepted all of us into the family, to the point to where, you know, even once she transitioned, it was a rough thing. It was really like, I really felt like I lost my mother as well. Even though I have a birth mother who, unfortunately, who passed herself in 2012, a couple years after Mama and Jerry, but I really, really felt like one of my mothers was gone. But I also felt appreciative because I was there at her feet to learn so much and to get so much info on journalism, how to research information, how to disseminate it, how to put it out in ways that our people can get the gist of what needs to be said and not let up. Just, yeah, it's so beautiful. So I'm just in full-on gratitude that I was able to know her for the small time that I did, because I think God first got on the program in about the end of 2009-2010. So I didn't really have a lot of time radio-wise working with her. But before that, I always knew her as a sister and from the community. She was a Rasta sister, and I would see her at a lot of Rasta events or either just black events. And just her energy at these events would just be moving. She's someone that was she's magnetic. She comes in the room, you got to come to the sister. What she's about, what she's talking about, what can I do to help, whatever you're doing, that's who she was. So I just appreciate, love knowing her and being able to sit at her feet, and hopefully I can carry a little of that forward in my day-to-day as I deal with others.
All right, all right. Thank you, brother. You brought a wonderful, oh, wow. I mean, it's just beautiful. Thank you so very much. Ah, okay. Moving right along. Wow, that was just great. All right, family. So listen, I want to thank. Is the radio program still on? Are you still doing something?
Yes, actually, the program is definitely still going on. Kwaku. Kwaku right now presently is leading it. I'm still part of the team, but not as much on air anymore. But, yeah, that's just even learning the legacy of how the radio program started and how long it's been going on since 1987. Now, that's one thing that how them old white men used to say about their guns, you have to pry it from my cold, dead fingers. That's how I feel about this type of program. Like, nah, you're going to have to make me leave. You're going to have to kick us out of here if you want us gone. Other than that, yes, ma'am, it's still rolling.
All right, so then share that with the family. When are you on, or when is it on, and how? I'm sure, you know, with the internet. So just share the day and the time and where they can catch the program.
Every Friday from 6 p.m. until 7:30 p.m. It is, if you're in Atlanta, it is on the terrestrial radio station 89.3 FM. If you are not in Atlanta, you can listen online, and the call letters for the station is WRFG, Radio Free Georgia, and .org, WRFG.org, and just click the Listen Now button. Once you get to the website, you'll see a big box, and it tells you what programs are playing. So if it's a Friday, between 6 and 7:30. That is What Good Is a Song, the Friday Night Drum. And yeah, you can click and listen now, or even on radio apps like TuneIn and all those other little apps that have radio. As long as you look for WRFG Atlanta, that'll get you in there. And it's Friday, 6 p.m. till 7:30 p.m.
All right. Very, very good. My brothers, I thank you again. And I'm looking forward to connecting you with you when I come to Atlanta, because I'm definitely coming. So, you know,
all right.
I'm hey, to get my hugs.
Indeed.
Wonderful.
All right. Give thanks. Thank you again. And I'll definitely be in touch with
thanks.
You soon. Peace to you.
All right. Look forward to it.
Indeed.
Thank you, too. All right, family, moving right along. We're going to go to you, caller. We're coming to you at 1398. Thank you for being so patient, 1398. Your mic is open.
Yes, greetings to the MWM Village. We're living on the front line. Peace.
Yes, greetings. Peace to you, my brother. Okay. Did you have something you wanted to share with us, or you just checking in?
I've shared already. We'll talk
all
soon.
Right.
Checking in. We'll talk soon.
All right. Good thing. Peace to you. All right, family. We are going to get ready to close out. We thank you all again for tuning in. And since we still have Brother Sidney with us, we're going to have him to give out our closing comments for tonight. We want to remind you, though, however, if you are in the Philadelphia area tomorrow, we kick off with a rally in front of the building that we are claiming is our building. It will be the National Black Women's Holistic Development Institute and the Harriet Tubman Justice and Humanity Center. That's what we're talking about. In the spirit of Queen Mother Moore, we're ready to come forward with that and then some. Remember, Million Woman World March is now official. It will take place in Washington, D.C. However, leading up to it will be Million Woman March Week here in Philadelphia. We are organizing here in Philly with sisters who are serious and who get it. And believe me, I know who they are, and I know who they are not. And so for those who are, we're going to be going into our communities. Because, again, one of the conversations we had earlier is, you know, unfortunately, we talk to each other. Like some of these circles, we talk with one another, and that's fine. But the masses of our people don't know what the heck we're talking about, because we're not doing the kind of outreach to connect them to what it is that we are doing, saying, trying to do, and so forth. The reality of us really linking that to and with them is not there. So we figured out that that's definitely something that's going to now happen. So, again, sisters who, you know, might not know much about a lot of stuff that we're talking about, we're going to make sure we at least put forth an effort to introduce some of these things to them. And with that said, for example, for those who do not know, there are some lawsuits that are getting ready to be filed against various corporations in regards to the hair straightening stuff known as chemical relaxers. Well, this is going to be an opportunity for us, meaning Million Woman World March, because now we can hold sessions, hearings, so that sisters can give their testimonials, can give us other kinds of information, but it will also allow us to give them information on how to be more natural, perhaps, you see. It will allow us to engage. We have something that is affecting our women, and many of them are having issues that we now know is linked to those chemical hair relaxers. So very soon we will begin to hold sessions in our communities that addresses, have this affected you? Do you think it has? Have you proven it has? Either way, we want to hear about it. But again, this allows us to give them information about more natural self-care. You see, we understand strategy, y'all. It's unfortunate that more people didn't see that, but hey, what can we say? We gave you the opportunity. Moving right along, we're going to close out. We're going for 1 million members, y'all. We want 1 million members. Support. That's it. You ain't got to do nothing. Support members. 1 million. We want some other ones too, by the way, but this is kind of a campaign for another reason. 1 million members by the end of December is what we're going for. We're going to start pushing it hard now. And again, you can be a member with $1. Of course, there's other levels, but we're staying with $1. Are we worth a box of chewing gum or soda? Are we? Well, we're going to see. Yeah, don't think we're dependent on that, y'all. We done been there, done that, too. But this is going to tell a story. Anyway, let's go back to Dr. Sidney Davis, and we're going to get some closing comments from him, and then we're going to close this thing out. So, Sidney, you still there with us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I sure can.
All right, yes. yes, my dear Empress, and to all my brothers, and to all sisters and all that are here, in this podcast, I greet mm-hmm. you. You know, this thing that that we are trying to do with the million woman march, I'm getting tongue tied mm-hmm. here. you know, this is a dramatization of what it is that our women need to bring attention to. And one of the things that you mentioned was how we are not embracing ourselves as Black women. You know, if I want a white woman, I'll get a white woman. I don't need to get a fake one. With you trying to bleach your skin and trying to put chemicals in your hair, trying to make yourself look like a white woman. If I want a white woman, I'm going to get a real one, not a fake one. Now, I think that this needs to be dramatized in what we're doing with the Million Woman March. We need to bring these things to the attention of our women and our men as well, because, you know, they do it because they think we like it.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're partly responsible for that. And so this is a movement that is about embracing and accepting who we are and what we are and loving that and displaying that, exemplifying that. And this includes not just the Black American community, it includes every Black woman on this planet. And we have them all represented. We have them all represented here in the United States, or in this part of the world, wherever these Black women are going to be coming from, and to unite in this movement. And it's going to go worldwide. And let's get on it. It's on.
Oh, yeah.
I want to, you have my full support, Empress, and I am one of those brothers who is a womanist, a motherist,
mm-hmm.
a Black womanist.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I embrace my sisters. I embrace my mama. I embrace you all. And I want to bring our brothers together on this. I'm very pleased to hear my brothers coming on, giving you their support, and expressing their viewpoints with regard to what we're doing. I want to express my love for you all, my brothers, and I look forward to collaborating and uniting with you in our effort to do this thing. And I just want to say that I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased to see what's happening. This is a idea whose time has come. whose time has come. I'm very happy to be a part of it. I'm pleased to see it happening in my lifetime. And with that,
I know that's
that,
right.
And with that, I will say, Issei.
Issei, I love it. I love it. Thank you again, my brother. Thank you. So listen, family, again, we are on the move, as they say. And one of the things I just wanted to follow up on, I heard, I think it was Brother Reed mentioned Tulsa, for those who do not know, of course, the judge presiding over that situation declined, or rather, ruled that they would not be getting reparations. Now, if we sit back and let that go down like that, anyway, once again, Million Woman World March. Wouldn't that be a wonderful venue, capability to raise our concern about that? Our people need that Tulsa situation. Come on. You got to be kidding me. How dare that judge do that? And so we need to say something collectively about that. The world need to see our response. And if we do believe this power in the people, then let's act like we believe it and at least stand together and say something about it. There's no way that that judge should be able to remain in that office. Now, we talk about spirituality. When are we going to start using it in a way that's going to be more conducive for us? How about that? So you will hear us talk more about how can we harness and bring in some of the ideas, the concepts, but also the spiritual realities that is going to help free our people. How about that? It's a new day, y'all. I dare say it's a new day. So with that said, again, I want to thank all of you for tuning in to this segment of New Day. We will be back next week, same time. And we have some goodies coming for you. I can only tell you that. There's a lot of things happening. Sisters, we're getting ready to do some very, very wonderful things. Can you imagine what we could do if we invested in one another, in our people? I'm not putting anything against hair or nails, but I'm just saying, can you imagine if we just took one of our hair appointments or one of our nail appointments and invested it in something black? Do you have any idea what we could accomplish? Well, we do, and that's what we're talking about. And when we meet in October, that's one of the things that we'll be examining. We literally have began looking at companies, products, and other things that we may want to invest in. And lastly, Million Woman World March will be introducing one of our international campaigns. What is that? The Fight for the Cure for Sickle Cell. Yes. A national, international initiative that focuses on the fight for the cure for sickle cell. So those of you who are in various cities, I'm sure y'all heard other people talk about the fight for other stuff, cancer, heart disease, and whatever. But sickle cell, let's see now, who mostly gets that? So why should there not be a national, international campaign to fight for the cure for sickle cell? And by the way, we already know that there are companies working for different type of medications to at least help alleviate the pain. And we're going to be doing sessions on sickle cell. Now, why is this important? I mean, more than the obvious family, but Does anyone know that the Black Panther Party had a sickle cell program where they would do testing in the community 50 years ago? Who's doing that now in the community? You see, this is what we're talking about. Our people used to do certain things. What happened?
We happen. That's what we're talking about. So again, but we're taking it into another level of things. Lastly, with Sisters Investing, we'll be able to purchase some buses. Initially, buses that are, you know, some of them are like school buses or other buses that we will renovate and have in our communities in order to provide services. Like I said, we're up in the ante here. So we know to be mobile, to be able to go into our community and have the people to come to our location. We may not have a physical location there yet, but we can have a mobile one if sisters come together. These are some of the things we'll be talking about during our summit for the Million Woman World March. Now, if people can't support that, then I'm just going to say shame on you. At any rate, we're going to close out. Again, Dr. Davis, thank you so very much for sharing this session with us and family, you also as well. And thank all of you who participated this week for our Queen Mother More Weekend. Big ups to my Baba Bilal Suni Ali. Always. I mean, he's the one that connected us to our brother Kwaku in Atlanta and so forth. So, again, we're very appreciative of those who have come before us and are still with us. And we will strive now, again, in our communities. As of tomorrow, you'll hear us talk more about establishing emergency funds in our community. When we talk about business, the Yuba Collective, when we come together, these are business people, part of that is to have a fund in our community from the business, black business folk, where if there's an elder in the community or a fire in the community or there's someone that has a death, the Yuba group will have a fund that will be able to at least give them a couple of $100. Now y'all see what MWM is really about? Anyway, moving right along. Again, family, tomorrow, 3 o'clock, we will be 52nd and Warren Street at the building that we are claiming. We do have a scheduled meeting with the city council person of that location because we want to hear what she's saying or what she's suggesting or whatever. You know, we're going to go through the procedures of whatever. But best believe we already have another plan ready. And so we'll keep you abreast on how we move forward. The meeting is coming up in 2 weeks, but we are making the community aware of what's going on starting tomorrow, or more so, shall I say, tomorrow. All right, we're going to close out. And again, Brother Sidney, I'll be talking with you later on this week to see how we are going to proceed with your upcoming program. And making sure that we're ready for that, okay?
Very well. Thank you.
All right, and thank you. All right, family, again, we're going to close out, and you know what we say. Promote you to the Shinda. Together, we shall win. And you know what? When we say we shall win, we're talking about now. Till next time. Talk to you later.